Romans 1, 14. We're going to talk about being ashamed this morning. We're going to cover a verse that you probably know and have heard several times. But Romans 1, 14. We can start in 13 just to get rolling with it. But it says, I do not want you to be unaware, brothers, that I have often intended to come to you, but thus far have been prevented, in order that I may reap some harvest among you as well as among the rest of the Gentiles. I am under obligation, both to Greeks and to barbarians, both to the wise and the foolish, so I'm eager to preach the gospel to you also who are in Rome. For, here's the verse you should know, I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. So the central, it's like what he's doing. Not all of you have been here the last 2 weeks. I talked about his introduction where he says who he is and he says his call. And Paul's talking about this desire to get to Rome to preach to them. He wants to get there. He wants to talk to them. He wants to preach to them and share with them the gospel. And even to the Christians, he wants to share again the gospel to them. And then he goes into this argument, which I think, it's like here's the shift, where he gets out of his introduction, and he's shifting to what he really wants to talk about. And it's just all of a sudden shift, really. And he says, for, and you see, you're going to see this, the rest of this chapter, almost every sentence begins with for. He starts this chain of thoughts. This is happening. For this, for this, for. You'll see it all the rest of the way through. But he starts in 16. He says, for I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. And I want you to remember who he's talking to. This is the end of Paul's life, towards the end. And he's talking to a cultured Rome who's supposedly wise and has a lot of learning. And he's talking to a group of Jews who I'm sure think he's a false teacher, who have the Old Testament background but don't believe in Jesus. And he's talking to a group of people who either look down on him or think he's a fool or think he's misled or, he's a false teacher. And I'm sure it's just filled with negative thoughts. And I think that's what's feeding this thing where Paul immediately has to jump into this deal where he says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel. And he's saying that, I know, because he's wrestling with it. He's choosing to not be ashamed, but he's saying, look, it's a temptation. I know he's dealing, like we all do, with the temptation to be ashamed of the gospel or to be ashamed of Jesus. And so that was his battle. He's battling with smart people that are smarter than him, in a worldly way. And he's dealing with people who are in their religion and deep in it and just refuse to listen to him. That's his battle. And before I even got started in this whole lesson and how to not be ashamed, I want to think through, and you guys can shout out some answers if you want, but what are the major temptations to be ashamed of today? If you have anything, you can tell me. But I was thinking through, and it's not so much that we deal with people who are more learned so much around here, I think, or more, it's like, the biggest thing that people use, I think, today is just that Christians are bigots. Christians are closed-minded. Christians are judgmental. They think they're right and everyone else is wrong. And I just want you to remember that the world is always going to try to put you in shame. They're trying to make you ashamed about how you believe. Why aren't you open-minded? You see it everywhere. Every time a homosexual thing comes on the news, I'm a big sports fan, and more homosexuals have come out in sports this last year, than ever, and it's some big deal, and it's on ESPN every single day. Can't go to ESPN anymore without seeing it. It's like the major headlines, and, they're heroes, and they're all, even an ESPN analyst came out and defended, this is what I think as a Christian, and he gets, of course, suspended for 3 months because he said that. And, you guys know, you've seen this. You see it all the time. It's on the news. But you see it every single time. The answer is always, you're a bigot. You're so judgmental. I'm so ashamed of how you think. I see it on cakenews.com. I see it down in the little comments at the bottom. I'm so ashamed to live in this, you know, state where we're so closed-minded and we can't keep up with today's culture. And you see what I'm saying, though, right? It's just, it's all over. And it's this constant, the world is trying to put you in shame for how you believe. And tell you that you're falling behind and you're not keeping up. And you're so closed-minded and old-fashioned and it's pointless to think the way you think. That's what the world tells you. So that's your battle. Paul had his battle. All of us are dealing in some way with being ashamed of the gospel. For some of us, it's just a simple temptation at work that I got this guy who I know is not saved and I want to share the gospel with him. I want him to know Jesus, but I'm ashamed to hear what, you know, I'm ashamed to tell him because of his reaction. Is he going to be mad? Is he going to blow up? Is he going to hate me? Is he going to, you know, I'm going to have to work with this guy every day and him thinking down on me because I tried to talk to him about it. You know, all of us have this battle with being ashamed. You know that. So I want to talk about what Paul did. And I see, just in these four or five little verses, I see a couple key phrases that he says that helped him with his battle of being ashamed. The first thing I saw was in verse 14. He says, I am under obligation. Do you guys catch that? I am under obligation. That's the first thing he says that I think is part of his foundation for dealing with his temptation to be ashamed. It's like, you know, maybe this doesn't need a good example, but I was thinking of it like, you know, if someone, if Joe somehow came across the cure for Ebola, and, you know, and he just wants to keep it to himself, you know, just so him and his family don't get it, and doesn't want to deal with the chaos and the, you know, all the potential for whatever else, you know, to share it with everyone. That's, he has an obligation. He has something that everyone needs and no one else has, and he has the obligation to share it. That's, he has the cure. That's the same way with the gospel. Paul viewed it that way. He says, I am under obligation to Greeks, to barbarians, wise and foolish, no matter who they are. I have an obligation because I know something they don't. And even if they hate me for it, and they call me this, and they think I'm stupid, and they think I'm nothing, and they call me a liar, and they kill me, I am under obligation to share this. It's more important that I share this with them than anything else I can get in life, okay? That's how you got to view what you have. You have the gospel. You've heard it, and you believed it, and it changed your life. And you have it. You're under an obligation to every single person that you're around that does not have that. You've got to view it that way, or else shame will keep you quiet for the rest of your life. Guaranteed. So there's that. Second part I see him say is the famous verse 16. He says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. So first part is he realized the obligation he has. The second part is he realized the power of the thing he's carrying, okay? So this, I'm hoping what you're doing when you hear me talk, you know, I'm not just trying to give you a list of to-do steps. I'm trying to get you to change your mind. You know, I'm trying to get you to think, this is how I need to think about myself. This is how I need to think about this obligation for others. This is how I need to, and this one's like, this is how I need to think about the gospel that I carry. Do you know that it's the most powerful thing on the planet? I mean, do you know that? It is, but do you view it that way? And if you don't, change your mind. Get in line with the scriptures, okay? I have the thing that is the power of God for salvation to everyone who would believe. I have that, and you have that too. That's, you've got to view it that way. You have power. I mean, pure power. It's the gospel. You have the message that can change a life. You can change the eternity from someone from hell to heaven. You can change their life right now from a life of sin and death to a life of righteousness and peace. You have the message. And you got to look at it as just power sitting in you waiting to be handed out, even if people don't believe. That's how you have to view the gospel. And I'll show you more reasons why here, but in the last little thing he says here, 17, third reason Paul's not ashamed, for in it, in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. Okay, so Third reason he's not ashamed of the gospel is because the righteousness of God is revealed in it. Why is that a big deal? I'll show you a verse. If we go one more verse, just to make my point, verse 18 says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven." Okay, don't lose me. You know, stay with me. Okay, the wrath of God. How do you picture wrath of God? I mean, think of it to an extreme. Think of it how you think of it and times it by 100. Okay, wrath of God. God angry against you, okay? An angry God, the wrath of God, is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and, here's our key word for what I'm teaching, unrighteousness of men, okay? Who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. So reading this verse, and I ask you, what is the wrath of God against? It's against all ungodliness and all unrighteousness, okay? I'm trying to set the context for why you need to know that the righteousness is revealed in the gospel, why that's so important. Because the wrath of God is against all unrighteousness. That's the thing that God, you know, if God's wrath is on you, that's why. It's because of unrighteousness. He demands righteousness from you, okay? And you don't have it, and so that ignites the wrath of God against you. So this all-powerful gospel that Paul refuses to be ashamed of, he's saying, I refuse to be ashamed of this because you don't have righteousness, which causes God's wrath, and you need righteousness. And the gospel goes on to show that because you can't earn it, he gives it to us in Jesus. That's why gospel means good news. You know that? It's because he's given us the answer to cause his wrath to turn away. I mean, he's giving us righteousness. Okay, righteousness is found in one place. That's Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is our righteousness. And the only way to accept that righteousness is this thing he gives us called faith. Okay, faith accepts that righteousness. And so the gospel simply, as simple as I could put it, it is God giving us what he demands from us. That's the gospel. And if we don't have what he demands from us, we fall under his wrath. And so God gave us what he demanded from us. That's good news. That's how in this gospel righteousness is revealed. And that's why Paul's saying, how could I possibly be ashamed of this? It's everything to me. This isn't just some message, and this isn't just a good teaching, and this isn't just something to make your life better. It's everything. It's the thing that God demands from you, and you have the ability to accept it, and you have the ability to share it with others and give it to them so that they can get out of God's wrath, okay? You have the message. Paul says, how could I be ashamed of this? And I just think that, you know, viewing it in this way, this might be off topic, but just the value of this gift, it just causes all these other questions to fall away, because there's all these questions we can dip into. And I'm sure he's dealing with this in Rome. It's just like, you know, what about this person? And what about this nice person? Or this person that lived a good life? And, you know, we have all these questions about what does God do with all these people? Or does God save everyone? And just, if you truly let the gospel reveal to you the righteousness of God, it kind of makes all those questions fall away, because you realize it's just about Jesus and just about the righteousness that only he can give, and those two things. And that's what's central. If you can accept the gospel, that's what you need is righteousness, and Jesus is the only one who gives that, man, those questions don't matter, you know? It's about Jesus. That should be our answer to all those questions. It was just about Jesus. It's just about God's Son. So beginning of Romans 1, like you've heard me say for 2 weeks now, is Paul views his calling and his gifts, just like you should view yours, as something that brings faith out of people. Okay? That's what Paul's saying. He's saying, I have these calls by the grace of God that bring faith out of other people. And faith is the one action that allows righteousness, which is the thing everyone in here lacks. This is the thing I lack. Okay? Righteousness, faith is the thing that allows that to be imparted to me. Okay? So that's how Paul's viewing what he's called to do. He's saying that here's Tyler over here in Rome, and Tyler needs righteousness, and I know how to get it to him. He has to have faith in the gospel, and what I'm called to do is to go over here and use my gifts, and as I share the gospel with him, you remember the verse, faith comes by hearing, and hearing from the word of God. As I share the gospel with him, faith can potentially come out of his heart, and I'm imparting, you know, delivering someone from death to life, delivering someone from hell to heaven, and mainly to Christ. But that's how he views his call. So he viewed his call accurately, and because he viewed how much power he has in his call, and by the grace of God, he's able to not be ashamed. Okay? And if in any of that I had any kind of, well, I'm not good enough, I did this, I failed here, you know, I did this 10 years ago, I'm not worthy to share. If I had any of that, Satan will beat me with shame. Okay? That's why we've been trying to lay the foundation for 2 weeks about it's all about God's grace and the call he put on your life apart from anything you've done. It's about his grace, and it's got to be based on that, or Satan will completely shut you down. So I wrote, so you, and primarily through this thing called sharing the gospel, have the potential to bring faith from people that allows the most powerful thing on the planet to happen to them, you know, just salvation. Just for all of us, for every one of us, salvation is the greatest thing that happened to us, right? It's the greatest thing for every single one of us. And you have the ability to give that to someone else. I mean, and so how dare we be ashamed of the gospel, even though everyone are tempted, and everyone of us has reasons, you know? We have reasons to be ashamed, but how dare us be ashamed of this obligation and this power and this huge revelation that we all carry, and that God actually not only allowed us to carry it, he allows us the ability to give it to someone else. I mean, none of us deserve to be able to do that. And we all have the ability to do that, to share the gospel by his grace. I mean, it should blow you away what we have if we view it accurately. Can't be ashamed of that. Was Paul ashamed? I mean, did he have temptations? Yeah, of course he had temptations, or he wouldn't even address it. But was he ashamed? He says plainly, for I am not ashamed of the gospel. Now, he's not ashamed. Are you ashamed? That's my question. I always try to make these practical at the end, the last 5 minutes. I'm trying to ask myself this week. So just so you know, I'm not just trying to preach at you. In what ways am I ashamed of the gospel? And I'm already thinking of two or three ways, you know. It's like, wow, I've been ashamed in this area. You know, I've been holding back in this area because of this one thing, shame. You know, the gospel comes with shame. I mean, look at Jesus. The gospel comes with a measure of shame. So I got another verse for you that we're going to end with, and I'm going to make this practical. Hebrews 12, first couple of verses. I'd love if you all went there. I usually don't make you turn. If you have a Bible, turn there. I want you to see it. Hebrews 12, 1 through 3. Here's my practical steps. If you're struggling, like we all struggle, with this temptation to be ashamed of the gospel, here's my practical steps for getting over that. Hebrews 12:1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us all lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Okay, verse 2. This is what I want you to see. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who, step 1, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross. Step 2, despised the shame. Step 3, is seated now at the right hand of the throne of God. And step 4, consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. Okay? So here's what I call my 4 steps, I guess. I hate giving steps. But here's what Jesus did. Here's what Jesus did. For step 1 is he considered the joy that was before him. I want you guys to do that. If you're faced with that temptation and just that dread to be ashamed of what people think or what they'll say, I want you to count the cost. I mean, literally, sit down and think about what you're really letting sway you. And I want you to consider joy. Consider the potential joy you have, and for one, being obedient to God, pleasing Him, making Him happy, the potential joy that's in your neighbor who is living a deathly life, and you can give them the joy of Jesus. I mean, you can give that. You can completely change their life with this message you have. So I want you to consider the joy and all the potential for joy that's right in front of you. If you would get through this quick and temporary painful process to get the long-term joy for the Father, for you, and for your neighbor, okay? That's how you do this. I mean, you think about what you're letting sway you, and you decide that there's a treasure of joy that's right here that's worth me going through this 5-minute, this guy's going to hate me kind of thing, okay? That's why it's worth it. You think about long-term. You think about eternity. You don't think about the 5 minutes right now of awkwardness, okay? Step two, he despised the despised shame, and I just think that's just him looking shame directly in the face and saying no. Based off that decision, based off this potential for joy, looking to what's possible here, by faith, I think he's just, you know, you got to eventually say no, just like you say no to sin. You got to, by the grace of God, by the strength that's in His Holy Spirit, you got to say no to shame, just like you say no to sin. Say, I don't, you know, you're right here, I get it, I don't care. This is more important to me. Obedience to God is more important than this. Third, I want you to think about looking to your reward, which is kind of the same thing, but it says that Jesus, look the joy set before him, despise the shame, and he sat at the right hand of the throne of God. I just want you to think about the reward, and not just for yourself, but the reward for your neighbor who you're sharing the gospel with, but just, man, so much of our motivation. God is fine. I see it all throughout the Bible. God's fine with giving reward for obedience. It's all over the place. And most of the time, the reward's joy, I think. But there's all kinds of reward. And I want you to look to the reward of just flat out, all out obedience to Jesus. I'm going to share, you know, and even if there's no reward, do it, of course. But man, God motivates us with reward. I think you guys all get this. I just want you to apply it to this area. You know, I was thinking, me and my wife, and it's mostly me, and it's, but I'll sit down and have these talks with her, like, here's what I've done wrong, you know, I'm sorry, I just did it this week, you know, I said something I shouldn't have, I was a little bit frustrated about a lot of things, take it out on her. I'm sure you guys have all done something similar, and Stephen hasn't, and, man, but of course, right away you feel convicted, and you have this option where, and this is exactly how I thought of it. I could walk out right now, not walk out, I was going back to work, you know, but I could go back to work, just kind of blow it off, hopefully she'll be all right by the time I get off at the end of the day, and, you know, but, or I could do this thing where I do the hard thing, and I sit down, and I sit in front of her and say, here's what I did, I'm sorry, I've been a jerk, you know. And I really didn't mean that. Here's why I said that. I love you. I hope you have a great rest of your day. You know, I have two options here. One's super easy, walk out. One's really hard, sit in front of her and confess everything I'm doing wrong. And which one do I choose? If I'm looking at this short-term deal, I'm going to walk out and just hope she's okay. And we're going to have long-term fights. And, you know, a week from now or a month from now, she's going to bring that up. And remember that time you walked in? It's just going to bother her and stick with her and ruin her day. Okay? I could do that and take the easy way out. But if I'm looking at it like this, it's like, I'm going to go through this short-term, 2-minute apology where she's going to be so pleased and happy, you know, that I apologized, and she's going to have a good rest. I mean, you think about consequences. That's what you do. You think about long-term consequences. And for those of you who work out, you know, I see Chris at the Y, you work out because you put yourself through 1 hour of pain so you'll have, you know, 23 hours of health or what, you know, but you count cost. You're willing to go through certain amounts of pain, you know, or certain amounts of, you know, struggle, just short term, if you get long term benefits. That's why we do almost everything in life, you know. That's hard. And so I think that's what Paul would say. Don't worry about, you know, suffering. Don't worry about fear of death. Don't worry about, you know, what they're going to say about you or the fear of man or all. These are all short-term pains that you get long-term benefits for. Yeah, Joe. Completely agree. Yeah, that's right on. Out of time, I want you to, last part of that says, consider him. Okay, consider Jesus. That means, it's just like a command. Just stop. Think about Jesus. Okay, don't get caught up in all this mess. Like Joe's saying, don't get caught up in yourself or the others. Or stop and consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself so that you would not grow weary or faint-hearted, you know, and I just want to finish with saying what a great example we have in Jesus, you know. I mean, more than any other man or more than any other motivational teaching or what Levi said on a Sunday morning, we have the most, you know, motivational, perfect example right, you know, in Jesus. So stop and consider him, you know, consider what he went through, and that's enough, you know. Take care of all this. Father, in Jesus' name, pray you deliver us from shame. Thank you for the measure of shame that comes with the gospel. Thank you that it separates us. I pray, Father, that we wouldn't be ashamed, and shamed in such a way that we're shut down or that we're quieted or that we can't share or that we're paralyzed. I pray that you deliver us from being ashamed. Pray that we'd count the cost. I pray that we'd look to joy. Pray that we'd realize everything we have in the gospel and we wouldn't be ashamed of it. And I pray that we'd consider your perfect son who set the perfect example and went through all this himself. We thank you for Jesus Christ. Amen.